Welcome to Southern Steep, the public health and social justice podcast brought to you by NASDAQ. Much like brewing stronger tea, this platform aims to brew stronger community by centering the voices of community leaders and their innovative work in the Southern United States. My name is Nicole Elinoff, and I'm joined by the fearless, ferocious Bianca Ward. Hey, Bianca.
I appreciate being fearless and ferocious on today. I am going to put that on a mirror so I start my day feeling fearless and ferocious. Hey, Nicole, thank you.
You know, you are fierce and ferocious. It's all fierce, ferocious flowers. I'm about the alliteration today. And we've got some amazing, amazing guests who happen to also be in floral. Y'all can't see them, but they look amazing.
Radiant.
Radiant, glowing, incredible. We're excited. So let me tell you a little bit about our incredible guests. And that is Deidre Spears Johnson and Shantae Spriggs. So I'm going to read their bios because they are very, very impressive individuals. And we are trying to give people the flowers as much as possible. So Mrs. Deidre Spears Johnson is a dynamic leader, nonprofit expert, community agent for change, grant writer, and coach committed to creating access to resources that empower and improve lives. With over 20 years of healthcare experience among local and state health departments, physicians, FQHCs, and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, she has learned the art of bridging the gap between policy and practice. Her most recent and perhaps most notable role is that of co-founder and executive director of Heart to Hand Incorporated, a grassroots community-based nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support, education, and resources that promote healthy lifestyles, decrease health disparities, and increase access to quality health care. In 1999, Mrs. Spears Johnson and her best friend envisioned a better way to provide HIV care services, particularly to women of color. She understood then and now that HIV not only infects the individual, but also affects the entire family and community. Heart to Hand was established to provide a holistic approach to service delivery in a compassionate manner, meeting people where they are, by becoming the family clients need to manage their chronic disease. In this role, Deidre Spears Johnson has expanded the organization's service offerings to include HIV medical care, case management, medical transportation, emergency financial assistance, health insurance premium support, psychosocial services, and mental health services, and increased the operational budget by more than $2 million in a 10-year time span. In addition, Mrs. Spears Johnson is a strong advocate for disenfranchised populations and communities. She has served on planning councils and coalitions that fight to improve access to healthcare and improve social justice. She is also passionate about community outreach and engagement and understands that communities have leaders named and unnamed that they must be honored and involved when tackling issues. Mrs. Spears Johnson has had many successes in her experience with engaging communities as a part of the solution, including her role in integrating community health workers in the HIV system of care in suburban Maryland. In her work with community health workers, Mrs. Spears Johnson emphasized self-care in her training curriculum. She received her BA degree in psychology with a minor in sociology from Mercer University, and an MS in Health Services Administration from Central Michigan University. Mrs. Spears Johnson also has previous experience with Merck Pharmaceuticals, a Fortune 500 company responsible for orchestrating $4.8 million in sales, educated hospitals, integrated health systems, state health departments, and private sector physicians about pharmaceuticals and vaccines. Welcome, Deidre.
Thank you. I'm excited about being here.
We're so excited to have you here with us too. I also want to introduce our next guest. That's right. On the Southern Steep today, we have two amazing guests. So it's a party for sure. And that's Shantae Spriggs. Shantae Spriggs is the epitome of DC raised me and Carolina made me. Being a native of Washington, D.C., and residing in North Carolina for many years before returning home to Maryland. One of Shantae's biggest joys is her family. She is the eldest of her siblings, proud mother of two, and marvelous Mimi to her grandchildren. Shantae's passion for coaching has intensified throughout the years. As a result, she has been afforded the opportunity to coach, train, and consult with various individuals, artists, faith-based communities, and organizations. Shantae has spent most of her career developing individuals, driving performance, and managing teams in her role as a senior executive for a global financial institution for over 15 years. She serves the community as a support group facilitator and change agent for women living with HIV. Shantae is a master facilitator for national training initiatives, including Health HIV Literacy, BLOCK, which stands for Building Leaders of Color, CLEAR, Choosing Life, Empowerment Action Results, and Healthy Relationships. As a lover of knowledge and higher learning, Shantae has earned her AA in Psychology Christian Counseling and BA in Psychology Life Coaching from Liberty University. Shantae manages to balance her career, passion for coaching, drive for continuing education and HIV diagnosis with positivity and resilience. She continues to live life purposed, fulfilled, and out loud. Welcome, Shantae.
Ah, you gotta expect the unexpected in this world.
And roll with it.
You know, I think that was more of a grand entrance.
Well, I can only be me.
Thank you for having us.
So I wanted to have y'all on here for, there's so many incredible people doing work in the South, but I wanted to invite y'all on here for a couple of reasons. One, the work that you both are doing in the Maryland community, but also just getting to meet y'all we were in the BLOCK training together back in 2019, and just seeing the two of y'all and your dynamics and how much heart literally is in the work that you do and the heart work that makes it happen. So we're really happy to have y'all on.
We're grateful to be here. I definitely am. I'm glad that you consider Maryland the South. You know how some people, we continue to say we are below the Mason-Dixon line.
Yes, you know, yes.
And I'm glad y'all brought it up because that is definitely something that we want to talk about today.
Thank you again for having us.
So, y'all's bios are both so incredible and so impressive. And, you know, we heard it a little bit in both of your bios, but can you tell us a little bit about your why? Why do you do the work that you do?
I'll let you go first, Deidre.
Thank you, Shantae. I have so many whys. I think I live in Maryland, but I'm from Georgia. So I'm definitely a true Southern girl at heart. And just growing up in a small town in a small community where my grandmother was every Sunday, anybody in the neighborhood could come and have dinner. Just wanting to make sure that my community was okay. And in 91, I started working for the Centers for Disease Control right out of college. I lucked up on identifying the public health advisor job, didn't even know anything about it, didn't know it was a thing. And they came on campus at Mercer and I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I was thinking of going to law school, but then I got this opportunity. And so I got hired at CDC. They sent me to West Palm Beach, Florida. My first year, they do the whole training over some months. Teaching you how to do pre and post test counseling, teaching you how to do phlebotomy, teaching you how to do community engagement and outreach. So I really started in the community at that level. And during that time, HIV was impacting particularly the Black community, but particularly Black women. And as I would tell people that they were HIV positive, the resources were very limited and it didn't feel like family. And people seemed so lost. And I just remember one particular case where there was a mom who came to the local health department in West Palm Beach and she had a baby. And so they were giving the test results. They were doing all the vaccinations for the baby. They were doing all the tests. And for whatever reason, the doctor actually got stuck with the needle that she was giving the vaccination for the baby. And so because the doctor got stuck, they had to run the HIV test on the baby. And the baby was positive. And so that was right before they had started doing HIV tests on pregnant women systematically. And also, babies were still being born HIV positive because they didn't have the treatment protocols in place. And so the baby was positive. And so they had to convince the mom to allow the health department to test the baby for HIV, and the baby came back positive. The mom didn't know she was positive at that time. And this is a pretty much a newborn. And so then we had to convince the mom to get tested for HIV. And mind you, I was 22-ish. I mean, I'm dating myself. I've been doing this work for a long time. And so I was working clinic that day. I happened to be the DIS that was on clinic. And so they called me up and I had to do the counseling. In that moment of telling the mom that her baby was HIV positive, testing the mom, and then telling her she was positive impacted me in a way that I never expected. And that fact that I had to make referrals for her that didn't seem like they were enough. It didn't seem like they cared enough. It didn't seem like they knew how to handle her based on her experience in life. It just felt like, it took me till 99, but the wheels start turning at that moment. And I could never get it out of my mind that you have this chronic illness, your family, you don't want to tell your family. And back then, for sure, they didn't want to tell their families. They, unfortunately, today, HIV positive individuals still have a hard time telling people. It's getting better, but it seems like it's still difficult. And then you're going to places where even healthcare providers at that time were almost hands off. And so it just felt like I needed to do something. And then even working with hundreds of other HIV positive patients over my career, it just didn't feel like it made sense to me that you have a health issue and we put this major stigma on it. Now it's causing you not to go to the doctor. Now it's causing you to lose your loved ones. And you're by yourself. And it's a public health issue. I mean, so there's so many layered issues upon issues. And I just, growing up in a community that I saw my grandmother care, I saw my mom care, and I just wanted to make sure that my community is okay. And I wanted to do it in a way that was Black. I mean, that's all I can say. That was just how I grew up, how it made me feel. I just felt that people deserved that.
And y'all have, you know, it's, so you all got started with the Heart to Hand in 1999, the wheels were turning, and you co-founded it with your best friend, Sally Joseph. From the dining room table, can you tell us a little bit about that?
So I got the job with the CDC. They sent me to West Palm Beach for a year. And then at that time, the epidemic was just across the country. And so CDC was sending the public health advisors wherever they need them most. And I got assigned to Cheverly Health Department in Prince George's County. I didn't know anybody. At that time I wasn't married, no children, no anything. It was just me. I'm like, okay, I get in my car and I drive up here. And so that was 30 years ago. And I thought, okay, I'll be here for a couple of years, worked at the Prince George's Health Department. And then I would go back to Atlanta to work at the CDC. I got here and then I worked at the health department for 7 years, and the community just needed so much in terms of just, the health department was really the only thing happening at that time for HIV care. And they were doing the best that they could, but within a government system, there are things you can do and things you can't do. And so then my mind just kept saying, there's so much more that we can do. And then there were small agencies, there were agencies that would start and stop. And then I had the opportunity to work in DC as operations manager for DC. And then I just was like, well, I don't think this is it for me. I got to get out of the system so I can help do what I, you know, what I kind of think needs to happen. And so we would meet periodically over all those years thinking, what can we do? What can we do? And then in 1998, I decided to quit CDC. And so thinking about that process of, I have this good career, but it's not fulfilling my soul. Like something is missing. And people are looking at me like, are you crazy? You can't do this. And as much as part of me was like, no, I can't do it. Other part of me was like, I have to do it. Like I don't want to 30, 40 years later, say I didn't I missed the opportunity to make real change. And I did make change, I think, in that position, but there were a lot of things that I couldn't do that I thought I needed to do. And so we started creating a plan. I left the Centers for Disease Control, and that's when I went to pharmaceutical sales, because it was no conflict of interest in pharmaceutical sales and nonprofit that I was doing, but there was definitely conflict with trying to get grant money from the government to work in HIV and start a nonprofit agency to provide services. So we started creating our plan, and we initially didn't have any funding. And so we got brochures and things from the local health department. And we initially started just passing them out. Like, we had no program. That was a program, health education. So we would go in the community and pass out condoms and brochures. I literally wrapped my own car with Heart to Hand logo on it. Like, I'm obsessed. I mean, I at that point, you know, you have to do, it was just what I had to do. And sometimes I didn't even understand why I was doing it. Or I'm like, why am I doing all of this? You want to run away from it, but your heart just continues to go towards it. And so then we were able to get our first grant of $50,000 from the health department. And the thing about programming, I learned a lot with CDC in terms of how to create good programs, how to have great fiscal management. And I knew that in order to grow the organization, we had to create a business. And so in creating the business structure, we created partnership from the small $50,000, then we grew to another level of responsibility and partnership. And we just grew it over the years, understanding. So now the people need, they had the condom. So now they need care coordination. Let's try to get a grant for non-medical case management. And over the years, then we got medical case management. Then we got psychosocial support. So we built the program based on the needs of our clients and in partnership with our clients. And it has been important to me to have clients on as staff or members and those kinds of things, because although I love and understand public health, I understand that there are some parts of this experience that I don't understand. And so it's always important to have people who are living that experience, who are who can guide us. It's not, you know, it's not completely my story, but at the same time, it is my story. And so just wanting to make sure that we honor the people that are living with HIV, but also trying to understand that we can prevent it. And how do you put those programs together? We just built upon those blocks. We created good partnerships. And also we just wanted to make sure that whatever we said we were going to do, we did it. And we tried not to overpromise. And if we couldn't do it, we tried to say, hey, we had a problem. Can you help? Communication. And that all really came from my Centers for Disease training, also my pharmaceutical training. I sort of married the two so that the experience that our clients received was more like a client or a customer versus a patient. And we created a partnership.
I love when you, so an episode that Nicole and I did recently kind of had this similar, a little bit of a similar story, where it was like, you have this great job, but you know that there's something more, and you take this leap. So you left your good government job, the CDC, as they would say, and took this leap, but in order to give your community what it really needed. And so just appreciating, I appreciate that. I just want to jump ahead a little bit. So, Shantae, tell us how you got connected with Heart to Hand.
Okay. Well, first of all, I don't even know how you put me behind Deidre. Like, how am I supposed to come behind all of that? You know, she done wrapped the whole car. I mean, how do you come behind
the whole car?
I barely get my truck washed, you know, she's wrapping her whole truck. Like, so as a woman that was diagnosed with HIV back in 2010, I was actually living in what you call the South, in North Carolina at the time. And I was married, and I was working for a global financial institution. And kind of unlike Deidre, I kind of stayed in my career path. During that particular time, I was diagnosed, and my job transferred me back to the DMV area. So it transferred me back to Maryland. And at that time, I was going through a divorce because I went through all the changes with my diagnosis and everything. And my marriage wasn't the best at the time anyway. And so I was coping with all of that. And just one day it just hit me that, hey, I was just simply being a wife.
You know, I was diagnosed, and that's all I was doing. I didn't have answers. I'm a person that's very analytical. Deidre knows that about me. I have to know the why in everything. Okay, why did this happen to me? Oh, it happened because I did this. And I had to understand that HIV was just something that it had so many cause and effects that I may not never find the why. And so when I came to the DMV area, I said, there has to be a way that I can give back, because there's another woman. And at that time I was thinking about another wife. There had to be another wife that was in my position. There had to be another woman that was just in my position, that was just simply being who they were. And one night I got the Googling, and I said, HIV conference. And I came up with AIDS Watch. And I said, well, oh, it's free. And at that time it was free. I said, it's free. I'm gonna go ahead and sign up for this. And so I signed up for AIDS Watch, and I went the first year, and I said, oh, this is phenomenal that we can actually, you know, that was the first time I was introduced to advocacy work. And I said, this is something that I can do. I can kind of be that voice for others. And the second year I went to AIDS Watch, Deidre was there. And we was actually given our pitches as to like our story for HIV. And I kind of gave the example that I was what you consider the magic middle. And I was that person that, hey, I work a good job and I don't qualify for some of the benefits that others would qualify for. But then I don't think I make enough to where I could just outright pay for the HIV medicine. So I was kind of in that middle. And I said, what do we do for that gap that's in the middle, that magic middle? Because we can get, you know, depressed and get overwhelmed and say, okay, forget it, quit the job so I can get the benefits. But then I would lose out on my 10 plus years I had in the global financial institution and won't be able to go forward. And I said, there has to be a solution. And I said my pitch, and Deidre said, I need you. And I said, ma'am, who are you? And I was just so enamored by who she was. And she was like, you gotta come to my organization. And she said, just come to the support group. Just come and check it out. She was like, but the other women need to hear you. And I had kind of went through this whole thing. Well, when I first found out about HIV and I came out of my shell with it after being depressed for a year, I said, hey, I'm bold. You know, I was always that type of the person. I'm going to defend you. You know, something's going on in the neighborhood. I'm the one. Oh, they bullying you. Let me come. Let me show. Let me be bold. And that kind of transferred into my business ethics. And then I also wanted to show women, you know, that you're still beautiful with HIV. I mean, you see, I put my contour on. They can't see it on the podcast, but I got my contour on, my red lip.
You came ready.
Ready.
You know, always ready.
I love it.
Always. Beautiful and ready.
Thank you. We can still be bold and beautiful, but also the last thing I want to do is help break the silence and break the stigma that's associated with HIV. And so Deidre saw that in me. And without me even explaining any of that, she said, come to my group, let these other women see you. And so they can kind of glean on you. And I was thinking, me? And so as I kept going, I remember coming back to Deidre. I said, well, Deidre, I'm coming from Frederick, Maryland. I'm not coming down to PG County. And I don't know. I'm not getting too much out of it. It kind of feels like a testimony service. I don't know whether I'm in church or what. And Deidre was like, keep coming, just keep coming. And so finally, I was doing so much traveling with my job. She called me back later. And it was about a year later. And she said, hey, her and another person called and they said, hey, we want you on the other end. And I said, what you mean the other end? We want you to come back. And she said, I would like you to help facilitate the group. And to see that I was a participant in the group. And then now I'm actually being given the opportunity to be on the other end of it. It was a challenge for me. I was nervous. But Deidre, being the leader that she is, she said, ma'am, you're sitting up here facilitating for this global financial institution for years. It's the same thing. This is something that you really know. You don't have to read a book or read up. You know this. And I didn't, even though it made sense, it didn't click until my leader, my mentor saw that. And that's why I say it's very key that you have key people in your life that can see more than you and beyond you. Because once I stepped into that facilitator role, it was hats off. I mean, now it's no stopping me now. I mean, I've become the facilitator. I help with capacity building. I'm a published author. I'm coaching, like, but all that.
She got a book.
Yeah.
I got a book, y'all. Undetected, more than the status, Amazon. But anyway.
Love it. You better plug.
But those were the things that kind of connected me, the heart to hand. And I will say that there were some opportunities that came up with my job about 2 years ago that would have caused me to look at, hey, do I want to transfer out the area? And at that time, I was just making that connection with the ladies that I have. And I made a decision. I never kind of like told Deidre the details. And I said, no, I'm not ready to make that move because this is my heart work. My corporate position, that keeps me structured. That keeps me organized. That keeps me in the loop with everything. But you got to have that heart work. And this is my heart work. And this allows me to keep that balance. So that's how I'm connected. And Deidre has, I mean, she can't get rid of me. I'm not going anywhere.
So. She can't get rid of me.
I love it. And I love that what you just said about, you know, kind of that day job being keeping you structured, but this being the hard work and just finding that balance. And that's so important in everything that we do. And I love going back to just one. I have been a heart to hand fan for a very long time. I mean, for a very long time, because I learned about heart to hand also working in community in DC. And so for a CBO there, and just being able to not only see the phenomenal work that you all have done, but the growth. Like when new programs were coming or just establishing more services and just the expansion. So yes, kudos to all of that vision and that leadership and literally all of the growth, because like you said, Deidre, we've seen organizations coming up, like has some really great ideas and then they're gone. What happened to, you know, so-and-so when you go to these planning council meetings or et cetera. So, amazing tenacity. Tell us a little bit more. Again, one of the things I feel like you all have always really done well is around your women's supports. So as you mentioned, Shantae, like the support group, I know there have been numerous conferences and just ways to engage. Oh, other shout out. I sent Deidre the picture, but one day I was just listening to Pandora and I said...
Yes.
Listening to Pandora, and I said, wait a minute, a heart to hand ad. And Deidre was there and it was so cute, and I took a little screenshot because I was like, I love, again, from wrapping your car to just being everywhere. So again, kudos. But you all have always been just at the forefront and making sure that opportunities to learn, to grow, to share, to empower other women has been kind of key in your work. Tell us a little bit about, why that's so important. Like, we know why, but why it's so important and how you all keep that going. And even in particular, like the Empowered Women Empower Women event that you all had. Tell us a little bit of that backstory and how that is key.
Something you said kind of, you talked about seeing organizations come and go. And I remember when we first started, we were the little kids on the block. You know, we were the smallest organization for a long time. Like it took us it's that first 10 years, we had a little bit of success. There were so many times we wanted to quit. Like there were so many times it seemed like we were done. And so when my best friend passed away in 2010, she pretty much said, you have to do it. So I have a boss that I can't even fire. Like she's just there. Honestly, my best friend, Sally Joseph, who passed away in 2010, is probably one of the main reasons that we've had such growth. And I say that so, like, it's just so real because it was important to her and it was important to me because I got laid off from Merck in 2009 and I had a choice to make. And the way things kind of are divinely designed, I don't know. And I'm so sorry she passed away, but And she passed away from lung cancer, but I'm so sad that she passed away. But I don't know that if she passed away that I would have had this opportunity because I probably would have got another pharma job. Not because I wanted to, but because it was the easy path. It was, you know, it was just, I always knew I was supposed to be doing this, but the idea of quitting I already quit one job. I was like, so now I'm gonna quit another job or I'm not gonna go back into the industry. So After she passed away, the fire was the shining even brighter that I have to do this. And we were literally down to no staff, no funding. So it's almost like we started over in 2010. And so it's always been about women for us. It's always been about helping Black women in particularly, because we don't always have the opportunity. And also because the women in my life, including myself, and I'm sure all the women on this panel, we always put everybody first. Although, I mean, I don't know if it's what we're made of or kind of the energy that I carry, but the women that I'm around, we always put everybody first. And so I wanted to make sure that we created something that would show them how great they were and that we would put them first, because we just did, you know, Black women were being effective, but they were not taking their meds because they had daycare. They had to take care of their kids, or they had to pay for stuff for their family, or, you know, or they didn't have time to even think about it until they ended up in the hospital. So we had to sort of put it in their face, because otherwise we were going to lose a lot more women than we had lost. And so I just saw so many programs that were general. And if you don't speak directly to us, we're not listening because we're too busy doing everything else. We're doing all the stuff unless we say, girl, we're talking to you. You know, so yes. I wanted to create programs that really just spoke directly to the women. And if you look at my staff, and it's so interesting, we have 20 or about 20 people on the staff, and we have 2 men. And I think we get dinged on that a little bit. And it's not on purpose. We try to hire men. I mean, all the things. But for whatever reason, we just, you know, we have a powerful sisterhood of women. And a lot of the women were students and they were interns and they became staff. And so it's important to me to be able to create good public health practitioners. And I think about how I did public health and how public health is done now. It's a little different. And so I like for people to come. We work in University of Maryland. We work with Walden. For people to have their academics, like they learn in the book, and then they come to Heart to Hand and they got to get their hands dirty. And then they can decide before they go somewhere else and mess something up. Like, you need to know that if you're creating policy for a person, you need to know where that person lives. Even if you're not going, like, you need to have some exposure, some experience, some culture, some about that person. And so it seems to me that public health is now a little bit hands off for me. Mm-hmm. And so that's why it's very important for me to have women, anybody really, but we have a lot of young women come in into Heart to Hand. They might do community outreach. And everybody gets the opportunity to go into the field. I don't care if I love going. They try to keep me out at this point, but listen, I love being in the community. But you have to be able to go and talk to the people. That's what public health is. That's what we're here for. You can look at a piece of paper, you can create a policy, you can do all the things. But if you're not thinking about the people that you serve at all times when you're creating all these programs, you're going to get it wrong real bad. You know, so that's why I wanted to empower women. And also, they don't always have opportunities other places. And so, you know, I know people don't necessarily retire from Heart to Hand. I don't expect that. People always stay longer than we expect, you know, which is great. And then they don't, they're able to learn as much as they want. Like, so if you work in community outreach, if you're writing a grant, come and sit in with us, take a part. Like, you know, so we're teaching you all aspects of the nonprofit. And the thing about it is, and we also help them understand that it's a nonprofit, but you're learning about business. So it's important to be able to teach them that no matter what we're teaching you, you can take it somewhere else, you can create your own. There's so many opportunities. And to instill in them that you are enough, that they're enough wherever they are, whatever they're doing, doesn't matter. And also to not allow anybody to take that away from them.
I have got to jump in right here. I'm sorry, Bianca and Nicole. I didn't wait for my cue. But Deidre is so right when she say, like, it's more like a, I mean, we have fun, we empower women, but it's an educational center. Because I remember the first year I was there, Deidre tasked me with helping write the psychosocial support policies and procedures for the psychosocial support group. And I said, ma'am, I don't know how to do this. And she just said, here go the HRSA guidelines. She just gave it to me. And she had the expectation that I would be able to fulfill and complete. And at that moment, it showed me a little bit more that I could do. And since then, I've been helping write policies and procedures for so many other nonprofits. And even with my current job, I'm like, oh, I can write that. But I would have never known I had that skill set in me if she hadn't said, okay, come along. And I remember the day that she said, come along. She had me pull up beside her desk and she showed me, okay, now I'm gonna help you with this one. Okay, now you go back and you write it. And we did it. And so I had to say thank you so much for that, Deidre. It is truly an educational center. Like, we have learned so much under your leadership. Yeah, for sure. Sorry,
Eli.
Sorry.
No, you know, like, it, there's so many amazing seeds that have been watered by Heart to Hand. And, you know, we have some amazing leaders and advocates here, but I'm sure there's so many amazing leaders and advocates in Maryland, in DC, wherever they are, based on y'all's impact on them and their lives. So I'm going to ask a little bit about advocacy. You know, advocacy is one of the core values at Heart to Hand. Can you share a little bit about like what you all do for advocacy, but also how are y'all centering Marylanders in the conversation?
Shantae, do you want to take that one first?
Okay, sure. I can start it. So one of the things that I try to do with my women is I go by E3. I try to make sure that you just not come into a support group to deal with your emotions and your feelings. We deal with the emotional aspect of it, but then we also educate. And so we make sure that the women understand what they're dealing with and what their illness is, but we educate them further, like financial literacy, things of that nature. And then the last thing that we do is empower. And so with dealing with that, when AIDS Watch came up, I think the third time around, instead of me just going by myself, I went to Deidre and I said, hey, what if we get a group of women to kind of go along with me to AIDS Watch? And so she was, anything I pretty much bring to Deidre, as long as it makes sense and she understands the why and you're going to do it and she just need to sign off. She's like, okay, go ahead. And her and Ann are both great with that. And we didn't just show up, but we actually did a weekend training where we brought the ladies, and I think it was two weekends back to back. We brought them in and we explained to them, you know, what legislation means, what it means to advocate, what it means to actually have an elevator pitch. And they all tried it. So that way, when they showed up to AIDS Watch, they were prepared. And then like the next year, that's when COVID hit. So we're slowly anticipating when everything will open back up, because they've been asking me, when do we get to show up? And just to see that those women were more than HIV, more than their status, and they thought that they had a place and they had a right and a voice. I mean, that was worth all my tears and everything I went through. So that's my piece of advocacy work. And I just think that we're just going to take it even higher.
Yeah. So I think there's so much around advocacy. I think we really want our clients as well as staff to know that they're part of the solution, and that they're that the job is not just a job. Like it's for me. And when we interview people, it's a whole process. So we look for a skill set, but you have to be in it for the right reason. This is not just a job. And so with clients, we help them understand the legislation, like the laws. For instance, for Ryan White, we help clients understand that we are here to serve you. We're given this grant to serve you. We provide them with what the grant says, sometimes depending on what the service category is. They know, and it's not just for our agencies. We help them to understand that if they're going to another agency, that they need to respectfully be able to ask for the service and not feel like they're begging and not to be belittled. So that, you know, the folks will understand that I understand that you got this grant. People know that our clients will come to them and say, we know you got this grant for this service. We were told, and we need to know how to access it. And so also if they can access it, we, you know, help them understand that they can go to planning council to advocate for services that they don't have. And like she was saying with Block, building leaders of color, helping them understand how to call people in, how to speak versus just complaining. So being a part of the solution versus going in being disruptive into meetings and also that it's not just about you. So for instance, there may be a need that you have, but think about it in a global way that if you have that need, then probably other clients have that need. And how do we create something that's helpful for everyone? And so we really have worked at trying to help clients understand that they're part of the solution. But one of the things that we as a community still need to work on is bringing those individuals who are HIV negative more into the fold. I really would love to take a global community approach. We were working with HIV positive people for 30 years. We're getting them ready to understand what they need to do, but then you send them off to the wolves who thinks and still has the stigma. We haven't educated them. So giving information, giving people opportunity to practice, putting them in the rooms with people that they would not otherwise be in, and just the learning, because there are things that we just don't know. Like if we didn't have the opportunity to go to AIDS Watch, and even at AIDS Watch, they teach you how to go through the process. And so that's mm-hmm. what we teach our clients how to go through the process. And we're asking the community in a lot of ways to understand that HIV is a chronic illness, but we haven't done as much work with the community at large. And I think that that's where we are right now with, we have a campaign at Heart to Hand, sexual health and everything. And so we're trying to open up the conversation around just sexual health as a part of reproductive health, as a part of overall health, wellness, versus just going to the corner, like we're not all having sex. You know, it's so strange. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you think about it, it's very, like we're all creating, we're all procreating, but we can't talk about sex. I don't understand.
Make it make sense, Deidre. Yeah. Every day is more and more confusion in this upside down world. But I love, but just ditto everything that you're saying. But what I've heard throughout this conversation is just one, empowerment, empowering staff, empowering community, empowering clients, and then leading. In the way you're leaders leading leaders. And so just being able to train and prepare folks for what's next, and Heart to Hand has definitely done that, because I definitely know folks who have worked with you or still work with you and just kind of sing the praises. So thank you for both of you pouring into your communities. So we have one last little closing question that we ask all of our guests. So we would love for you to answer. It's a two-parter. What do you love about the South? And yes, we are considering Maryland the South today. or your Georgia and North Carolina perspectives. What do you love about the South? And what do you want to see for the South?
Shante? I'll answer what I love, and then I'll let Shante answer what she loves, and then we'll switch back. So there's so much. I mean, since I moved, you see me taking over? I'm sorry.
I love it. I got this. This is how I'm going to facilitate this. Go ahead, Miss Deidre. I know. I know you. Carry on.
I love her for that.
Natural leader. Organic.
I love it.
So I love so much about the South. I was a military brat, lived in Kentucky and Germany, but the most of my upbringing was Georgia. I love, like, even I was just in at home last week, and the doors are not locked. And, you know, it's not here, you know, it's not as clean. It's not as all foo-foo, but, you know, I have 10 cousins, generations running around, you know, we had death in the family. But so much family. I moved up here by myself. My husband's family's from here. So I don't have family up here, but when you go home, my mother's house is what they call the home house. And so, so there's my mother and her siblings, and then their children, and then their children, and they're even great grands, they're even children after that. So there's just so much love and so much, family. I mean, I think that's it, and safety. And I can be honest to say that growing up in it, I didn't realize it. I didn't accept it. I thought it was hillbilly-ish, and I just really didn't like it. But you know, if I'm being clear, but mm-hmm. when I go back now, I'm so grateful that I grew up in a place where I wasn't afraid. I could go to my aunt's house, who who lived next to my grandmother, my other aunt, you know, so we all were running from house to house and we're, you know, just feeling safe. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed that.
I think we start to appreciate those things more as we get older. We're like, oh, that's why.
Yeah.
Shante, what about you?
All right. So I just want to make sure I'm following the rules correctly. So I will give mine and then I will go into the last part of it and then we'll end with Deidra. I think that's how she said it.
That's how she set it up for you.
So what I love about the South, and I'm kind of taking this to my North Carolina hat. I love Bojangles. Okay. I just love my Bojangles. I love my sweet tea. And kind of going along with that is the hospitality that the South has and the connection that the South has. And when I say connection it's not just my family. It's my family, Deidra's family, Nicole's family. Everyone is connected. If something happens, if there's a fire on that block, everyone gets involved. There's such a connection there. Everyone helps out. Like right now, even with the gas, that's going on there. Gratefully, we're not having that issue here where I live at, but in North Carolina, it's all types of text messages going on where you got gas, where you get, I mean, I've just seen this interaction. And so is that connection. So kind of flipping that over to the second part of it is what I would like to see is more of not meeting to just meet. Because I think in North Carolina, there's, or even southern parts, there's a connection. You show up on the porch, we talk, but we're not having some of the tough conversations that we need to have. We're meeting, we're having the tea, we're having the Bojangles, we got the pig going, all that different things going. We got all those things going, kids running around, but we're not embracing hidden truths. And I think with those conversations, we can dig a little bit into hidden truths. And then that will allow us in the southern states to actually help us break the stigma that's attached. So we need to stop just meeting just to meet. Let's go ahead and dig in a little bit deeper. So that's the thing that I would like to see change.
Yeah, I agree with you, Shante, in terms of we're above board. You know, we're not aligned all the time. So I really agree with that. But I think the thing that I would like to see change is to be more inclusive. I think that I would love, you know, we all know in the South, there's definitely racism, sexism, like there's all kind of isms. I would just like to see us be more inclusive in the South. Yeah.
Agreed. And Shante, there is a Bojangles right up the street from my house. So whenever you feel like you need a chicken biscuit and a sweet tea, come on by and hang out.
I heard that Bojangles is running out of chicken right now.
Yes.
That's what they said.
Yeah.
We can have a breakfast sandwich.
Thank you.
You know, people texting about the gas and the Bojangles.
I love it. Thank you all so much. So how can folks get in touch with you, your program? What are all of the details for Heart to Hand?
So Heart to Hand, we're located at 9701 Apollo Drive. We're in Suite 400. And we also have a location on the campus of Providence Hospital. We have a medical practice there. So we do have two practices. Woo! So the main office is the Largo office. All of the services are there. Our phone number is 301-772-0103. And we do have Instagram. I think it's at Heart to Hand Inc. And we have a Facebook, Heart to Hand, just as Heart to Hand. And we probably have a Twitter, but I don't know that. That one. Yeah. You know, I have all my millennials taking care of that.
She has staff that takes care of that.
There you go.
They do a wonderful job.
We got a whole team.
They do a wonderful, wonderful job. But if you just give us a call, and we have, you know, during COVID, we have continued to serve. Like, we've not stopped.
Yeah.
Everything has been through telehealth for the medical practice. Shante, they've done Zoom support group. Mm. And case management has been done through Zoom. So we've not shut down at all. And we're starting to get back into the office now, slowly and safely.
And did I see correctly that you all were doing like drive through or drive up condom distribution and safer sex stuff?
And so we also, we are able to mail out HIV test kits, and we'll walk you through the testing process.
Awesome.
So awesome.
Love it. What a gift.
And Shante, how can we get in touch with you?
I'm on social media as well. Shante Spriggs, ShawnteSpriggs. I'm on Facebook, and I make it simple for you. Instagram is the same way. And then also feel free to check out my book, Undetected, More Than a Status. It's in Amazon. And I also have an Audible edition of it as well as Kindle. So I have all three. You can get the book, you can actually do the Kindle, okay, and you can hear my voice because I'm the narrator. So you hear the DC accent. Yes.
And I can vouch, it's so good. I read the book and I was listening to Audible. So good.
It's on my list.
I love it. Thank you.
Thank you both so much for joining us on the Southern Steep. It has been a true pleasure. And can't wait to see what the journey continues for you both and for Heart to Hand.
Thank you. It's been our pleasure.
Yes.
Wow. What incredible, sensational rock stars.
Just amazing. And it's so good to see Deidre again. I feel like, one of the things that I appreciate about her is that every time in every space, in every room that she is in, she is both, student and teacher, you know, like absorbing things and taking information to take back to community and her work, but also, as we saw today, dropping gems, letting folks know how to do this work better. And then just Shante, just magical. What I love about this podcast is being able to hear stories, hear how folks get into public health, get into this work, what that why is, and just the passion behind it. I don't know if we often enough get the opportunity to talk about really our passions.
I think that especially in this work, so much of why people are in this work is because of that personal why, and it's always really beautiful to get to hear it. And I also really loved how, because the two of both Deidre and Shante, like, they feed off of each other. And it was just really nice to see that energy together again.
Yeah, love it.
So good. And also special shout out to AIDS United for having the AIDS Watch program. You know, AIDS Watch really came through in these folks' advocacy journey. So special shout out to AIDS United. Mm-hmm. For this episode's edition of The Southern Charm, we are highlighting Sisters Together and Reaching, Inc., STAR. STAR is a nonprofit, federally recognized, community-based, faith-based organization that was created in 1991, and it was created to address inequities and services to African-American women and their families living with HIV/AIDS in Baltimore City. STAR has provided support services to women living with HIV and their families in the Baltimore metropolitan area since 1991 and expanded to serve men in 1997. STAR's mission is to advocate and provide optimal health and wellness to the underserved and at-risk minority communities in a holistic, faith-centered environment. Our Southern Charm.
I like when our Southern charms and our guests kind of just mesh well.
It's really good.
To also another organization in Baltimore doing really great work. Really great work for women, really great work for Black women, and have been doing it for a long time. And so I think similarly to Heart to Hand, the amount of amazing support groups that they offer and programs and conferences and events and just really getting the word out for their community. And I think, and like you said, not just women, because I know that they have a men's support group and are definitely providing services, but it's great to now hear of two organizations in Maryland that are doing the work and, you know, moving past just kind of talking about things, but doing as Shante kind of alluded to earlier. Yeah.
But, and also, you know, by the people for the people
mm-hmm.
and walk in the walk, talk in the talk. Mm-hmm. This organization also has been around for almost 30 years. And one of the things that really resonated during the conversation was about how so many organizations come and go and that sustainable growth is just so important. And that's how we've been able to see like Heart to Hand and STAR continue on into 2021.
Mm-hmm. And also just evolving and in order to meet the needs of the communities, expanding programs and growth. Both. Yeah, right. Growth. That part, seeing the needs of the community and growing with and growing to meet those needs, and that takes a lot because we know funding dries up. We know passion sometimes, advocacy sometimes that just
burnout
exactly. We get tired. So yeah.
That leadership pipeline is important to continue mm-hmm. to inspire and cultivate new leaders to not take the torch, but to light theirs too.
Ooh, what a word, Nicole.
We're not passing torches, we're lighting others.
Hey, very Olympics of you.
You know, it is the season.
I am ready.
Bianca, it has been such a pleasure again getting to host with you. Thank you all so much for listening to The Southern Steep. I'm Nicole Elinoff.
I'm Bianca Ward.
Thank you for listening.